Fringe Radio. Your trusted source for the paranormal, conspiracy theory, and true crime.
Coming to you live from the Mistopheles Studios, it's Dark Fringe Radio.
All I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
You're the disease, and I'm the cure.
That is power.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Dark Fringe Radio. I am your host, of course, Will Martinez, and thank you guys so much for joining us this week on another adventure here at Dark Fringe Radio. Tonight, we have a very special guest. Her name is Miss Christiana Gaudet, and she is one of the most recognizable faces in the world of tarot readings. And we're going to be getting into everything here tarot tonight, and we're going to be talking about the historical nature, some of the misconceptions people have when it comes to tarot cards, the negative connotations that it may have, and some of the true meanings that what it really represents. So we're going to be getting into all that here in a second with Miss Christiana Gaudet. Make sure you check out her stuff at the website below, ChristianaGaudet.com. Before we get into our interview, we just want to remind everybody how you can listen to the podcast. Very simple. You can check us out at our website, darkfringeradio.com, and you can make sure you go there and check out everything that we have. Our whole archive of shows is listed there, so make sure you check it out. Also, want to remind you guys about our YouTube at Dark Fringe Radio. Make sure you guys go there and like and subscribe to all our stuff there. It's a huge help when you guys do so. Please make sure you guys go ahead and do that on our YouTube. And of course, our social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Dark Fringe Radio. So with all that being said, we're going to get into our interview here with Miss Christiana Gaudet. And of course, you can find out again, all her stuff at ChristianaGaudet.com. So we hope you guys enjoy this interview. Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Dark Fringe Radio. Of course, your host, Will Martinez. And tonight we have a very special guest. Her name is Miss Christiana Gaudet. And she is probably one of the most recognizable talents in tarot and the intuitive arts today. Christiana began her reading professionally in Putnam, Connecticut in 1994. So she serves under a worldwide clientele with telephone and Skype meetings and other private meetings in her office in Palm City, Florida. Parties and special events are available throughout Florida and, of course, the United States. And she's raised as the daughter of a Methodist minister. Christiana has always felt a strong connection to the spirit world, and her studies have included many disciplines that continue to influence her unique and insightful reading style. In 1997, Christiana was awarded the title of Certified Tarot Master and Instructor by the Tarot Certification Board of America. And in 2008, she received the title of Certified Tarot Grandmaster, the highest level of certification in tarot. She is also the founder and director of the Tarot Circle, which also offers fellowship and tarot instruction to its members. Tarot Circle volunteers and provides entertainment and fundraising services to the community at large, which I am very, 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 I think that's just a great thing. Tarot Circle meets regularly in the Palm City area. And she, of course, hosts workshops on tarot and topics such as past life regression. We're going to get into that. Psychic development and spiritual communication. She's also available for quote unquote living room reading sessions at your home or office. And she's appeared on many radio stations in Connecticut and nationwide. Please welcome to Dark Fringe Radio, after that very long introduction, the tarot fairy godmother herself, Miss Christiana Gaudet. How are you?
I am well, William. It's so great to be here with you. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time with meeting with us today and talking about such an interesting topic. This follows right into the centrifuge of what we'd like to talk about. And let's get into it. So let's talk about your history and what got you interested in tarot. What drew you into it? Talk to us about that.
Well, looking back, I can say I have always been interested in the mystical. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, I was raised in the Methodist Church, which is not terribly mystical.
Yes.
but also, especially back when I was growing up in the 70s, it was pretty progressive. It was not filled with hate. It's got some issues now, I will say that. But back then, you know, for where we were at, it was pretty good. Mm-hmm. So there was an openness to spiritual exploration. Now, my mother was the queen of Christmas stocking presents. Anything that could fit into a stocking would likely go into a stocking for me for Christmas. So when I was 8, it was a deck of fortune telling cards.
Ah.
And it was a joke, you know? I mean, it was just a fun thing that fit into the stocking. Mm-hmm. But I read the instructions. I worked with the cards. And my little 8-year-old self found truth in that process of divination. Of course, the adults around me did not honor that particularly at all. But that was when it kind of opened up for me that divination was a real thing. Now, it would not be until my 20s that I got my first tarot deck. Mm. And I resisted it because I am ultimately a very skeptical person. Mm-hmm. I am a mystical person. I'm a spiritual person, but I am very skeptical. And the idea that 78 pieces of cardboard could tell me anything felt really silly to me.
Right.
But I was drawn to it. Nonetheless, there were many things that happened that made me feel like, okay, I will now get a tarot deck. It was like I was giving in to something, you know, something I did not want to do. Bought a deck, bought a book, and studied them for about 8 years, and then became a professional reader.
Mm. Wonderful.
Yeah, never saw that coming.
No, I mean, especially since you're such a skeptic, right?
Right.
You would usually not fall into that, you know, that side. You know, it's very hard and very seldom do you very see somebody like that. Usually, mm-hmm. you know, that person's all in and, you know, they're not skeptical at all, or they're just a complete skeptic and they don't believe in any of that stuff. So it's very refreshing to see somebody like you who is a healthy skeptic at heart and also, you know, able to do what you're able to do. But let's talk about the tarot cards themselves. You know, let's talk about the overview of the origins of the cards and some of the early history. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Certainly. And this is an interesting thing. When you had first reached out to me to invite me onto your podcast, one of the things you talked about was, you know, misconceptions.
Right.
And there are so many misconceptions about tarot history, and most of them are coming from within the tarot community.
Wow.
Hmm. Right. There is a lot of, I'm going to say, unnecessary disagreement around the history of tarot. And while I am not a tarot historian, I can tell you that we have historic proof that tarot originated in Italy toward the end of the Middle Ages, you know, beginning of the Renaissance, around there, and it emerged as a game. It's a trump-taking game, much like bridge. And today, especially in France, it is still played. It's a game. I have no idea how to play the game of tarot. But what's funny is there's a whole community, you know, just like there's a bridge community or a poker community or whatever.
Right.
There's a whole community of people who play tarot who think that those of us who do occult tarot and divinatory tarot are just crazy. Right? Okay, so fine. Tarot emerges as a game, and it became a deck of divination. It grew its occult value over time. And one of the ways it started was a fad that kind of broke out that while you were playing the game of tarot, you would make up poetry about the people that you knew, sort of gossipy poetry, sort of like, think about like rap in the early 80s.
Right.
People were talking about each other
in
rap.
Yeah. Diss battles. Yeah, exactly.
That's how I think about it. And in this poetry, the people that you knew would be compared to tarot cards. And eventually these things became like not what has happened or what this person is doing now, but what might happen in the future. So it became prophetic. So that's one piece. Now, There, you know, it's always true, right? That in any field, people compete with each other.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So there was competition to write books about divination and occult practices. And now I think we're like, I'm not a historian. Anyone who's listening, who is a person who really studies history, might find fault with some of my dates here.
Okay, we will hold you to it.
But I think we're coming into like the 1700s.
Okay.
And that's when the first book on tarot divination was written. But it was basically written to get a book out before another dude wrote a book about divination. I mean,
Hurry
it's
up.
really
Yeah.
very fun, right?
Yeah, got you.
So eventually, you know, tarot becomes this tool of divination. And what happens in, I want to say the early, no, maybe the mid 1800s, is the Golden Dawn is formed in London.
Yes,
Right? You've heard of the
yeah,
Golden Dawn.
of
So
course, of
without
course.
the Golden Dawn, there would be no tarot. That's the bottom line. So Golden Dawn embraces tarot. And
Gotcha.
as you know, members of the Golden Dawn included like William Butler Yeats, Madame Blavatsky, all kinds of really interesting people, MacGregor Mathers, all sorts of people, including A.E. Waite, Arthur Edward Waite,
Yes.
Pamela Coleman Smith, and Aleister Crowley.
Crowley.
Yes,
I
right.
was waiting for that one.
You're like right on that, right?
I knew that one.
Crowley and Waite did not like each other. Man, if they had social media, they would just be trolling each other all
Oh,
the time.
boy. Yeah.
They did not like each other. Crowley would refer to Waite, recognizing that Waite's name is spelled Waite. Crowley would refer to Waite as dead weight. Right? They
Perfect.
were not fond of each other.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of discourse at that point about tarot history. Where did tarot come from? A.E. Waite felt that tarot had European origins, which history now tells us it did. Crowley felt that it had Egyptian origins. And this is where like a lot of the community still follows that origin story.
Okay.
So in like 1910, 1909, 1910, Crowley hires Pamela Coleman Smith. She's 19 at the time, to draw his tarot deck. It takes her a summer. What she said about that gig was it was a very big job for very little money. Not surprising, artists always get screwed, right?
It's always that way, right? It's always that way.
But she drew the deck that we knew as originally as the Rider deck because it was published by Rider and Sons. We
Now, is that the
now
one that we know that that classical look that okay, so
Yeah.
okay, yes.
Yes. Yeah, that is, it's the world's most popular deck, most popular tarot images, and it's really a whole tradition of tarot. There are many decks that are Waite clones. In fact, the deck I've got here is the Wiser Tarot, published by Wiser, which takes the Waite images, recolors them to make them more beautiful and more inclusive.
Gotcha.
So, gotta love that. So, Crowley, discovering that, you know, Waite and Smith have created this deck, he goes off to Egypt, where he channels the hierarchical forces that rule the universe, and they tell him that tarot is of Egyptian origin. So then, and now, you know, some time has passed, but he gets Lady Freda Harris to draw his tarot deck, which would not be fully published and available, my understanding is, until the 60s. But that is the world's second most popular tarot deck.
Wow.
So we've got the Waite deck and the Crowley deck, and then many, many decks that are sort of clones or inspired by those two decks. There's also the Marseille deck. And a Marseille deck is a deck with a major arcana and a minor arcana that is not fully illustrated. It's just, you know, the Seven of Swords will show seven swords.
Right, got you.
Two of
Okay.
Wands will show two wands. And there are some people who just read the Marseille style, which is its whole thing. I'm not a Marseille reader. And I skipped over the entire part of tarot history about how tarot went to France, very specifically in Marseille. And as I said, still played in France as a game to this day.
That's wild. That's wild.
So that was just like the thumbnail.
Right.
And that really just takes us to, you know, the 70s. And then we come up into the 80s and we get...
Well, the 70s was what? The age of Aquarius, right? During that time?
Well, technically. I mean, the Aquarian tarot deck was published in the 70s.
Okay.
But we were looking forward to the Aquarian age in the 70s, right? Okay. But it did. I mean, what you're talking about, the 60s, the 70s, that whole revolution, the cultural revolution, was also a spiritual revolution. The Beatles went to India and started doing yoga, and now there are yoga studios everywhere. Those two things are connected. Right. And when the Beatles opened up to yoga, all of a sudden spirituality just opened up in the West. And so we get to the 80s, and then women are sort of looking at tarot and saying, well, this is cool, but it's patriarchal. It's, you know, it is not very inclusive. And so then a whole branch of tarot that I call feminist tarot was born, Daughters of the Moon tarot, Mother Peace tarot, coming up all the way now to Lightseer's tarot by Chris Ann, which was published by Hay House fairly recently, which is like this very modern, very, very inclusive deck. You will see people of all shapes and sizes and colors and genders in that deck, which I think is, you know, what feminist tarot was looking to do.
Yeah, be more all-inclusive, obviously.
That's
so.
It.
Yeah. Well, that's a great rundown of the historical. I mean, there was parts of that I did not know, to be quite honest with you, and I was, very interested in that. And that, thank you for so much for sharing that. That's just amazing. And it's amazing how, like, this thing has taken so many forms and it's been redone so many different ways, and everybody has their own take on it. So, a part of me, like when I talk to somebody who's into tarot, you know, part of me is like, yes, okay, you have the deck, which is the part of the divination of it. But is there part of, you know, yourself, like the intuitive part, where that also plays a part into it as well? Is it more of a symbiotic relationship between the divination of the cards and the intuition of the person, or is it solely the cards itself?
Well, that'll get you into an argument in pretty much
any
tarot group.
Yeah.
But it's a perfect question. It really is. I believe it has to be both.
Yeah.
I believe that when we come to tarot, and you know, there's a whole question there that also comes in, which is like, how did we go from being a game to being this book of spiritual wisdom in picture form? It's an interesting thing.
Right.
Because within tarot now, we have connections to astrology, numerology, Kabbalah, all kinds of stuff. Was that baked in there? Did we just find it? How? Like, there's so much that we don't know. And that's why so much of the tarot community does not want to accept tarot's mundane origins. Although I would say that the fact that the origins are so mundane is what gives tarot so much of its mystery and magic.
That's why, right? Yeah. I agree.
Right. So that said, to answer your question, I believe that when you start with the cards, you become more psychic. I think most of us have some intuition, some psychic ability. We have this within us. When you start with the cards, it opens you up psychically. You become more psychic. And I think typically people who are drawn to the cards are people who are generally very naturally psychic, whether they know that or not at the time. And so tarot will teach you to be more psychic and more intuitive. And you're right, there's many different decks, many different books, many different readers, many different takes on what the cards mean and how we use them. And I think each person develops a unique relationship with the cards and how the cards speak to them. And it is very much a mix of interpretation and intuition.
That's interesting you said that, because, you know, I've always been interested in all this stuff many, many years, ever since I was young. I remember going into a New Age shop, and there was a person there who, did tarot readings, and I overheard a conversation, and she was talking to another young lady, and she was talking about, the young lady was interested in becoming, doing tarot card readings and, learning how to do it and, all that. And so the person that was telling her, how to do this, is like, you have to develop a personal relationship with your deck.
There
You
it
have
is.
to, yeah, you have to develop like a personal relationship between the cards that you're handling. And then that's when things start to kind of balance out. And when I overheard that, I was like, man, that kind of makes sense because it's kind of like anything else in the world, right? I mean, you develop a relationship with anything, right?
That's exactly right.
Whether it's, inanimate or animate, you know what I mean? You develop relationships with that. So, I overheard that and I was like, I wonder if that's true. I mean, but it makes sense. I wonder if that's true. And you just basically, nailed the nail on the head on that. So for me, so that answers my question regarding that. But we talk about tarot and doing the readings and stuff like that. Do you do anything personally to like maybe prepare yourself or to prepare your space that you're working in? Is that an important part aspect to when you're
I
doing the
think it
reading?
is. I think it is. And everyone has their own way. I am at this point in my life, I've been doing this for so many years. I am very, how do I want to put it? Non-ritualistic about how I do it. When I was younger, I would have been very ritualistic. Now for me, it's about mindset, it's about meditation, it's about working with the energy. I can do a reading anywhere, anytime. You will never see that I am preparing the space and I'm preparing myself. You won't see it. I'm doing it, but you won't see it. But it involves creating, it's just working with energy, really. It's the space has to be, it has to be have the right energy. And that's done with invocation, it's done with clearing, it's done with setting intention. And same thing for me. I have to take all of my personal stuff and put it to the side because it's not about me. I have to be grounded, connected to the earth. I have to be connected to heaven, for a lack of a better term. I have to be open and ready to be that conduit. I have to be able to make that connection, and my voice has to be clear. Part of it is really with. It's the third eye, it's the throat chakra, it's the
The throat
crown
chakra.
chakra. So I'm doing a lot of energy work, but you'll think I'm just sitting there.
Right. No, that's wonderful because I've always wondered that. I mean, because in anything else, when it comes to divination, there's usually some type of practice or some type of cl clearing of the area or preparing, obviously, before you do anything. So that's very interesting. I did not know that. Let me ask you this. Could you walk us through maybe a typical tarot card session? What to expect? I mean, could you walk us through something like that? Is that possible?
Sure. So are you asking like, okay, I could take that question a number of ways.
Right. Yeah, I can
Are
see
you
that.
asking what is a session with me look like? Are you asking what a person might expect generally with a good tarot reading versus a scam artist? What are we
There we
asking?
go. That's what I want to know. I want to know the difference between a good one and a bad one. There we go. What to
Okay,
expect?
I'm on it. I'm on
All
it. Yeah,
right. Yeah.
good. I would divide, like, if we look at professional readers, I would divide us into three categories. Unfortunately, the largest and most visible category are flat out scam artists. And I'm sorry to say it, and it gives all of us a bad reputation. It gives tarot itself a bad reputation. But, how do you spot a scam artist? They probably have a neon sign. They're probably advertising readings for a really low rate. Get your psychic reading for $5, $10, $20, whatever. And when you go to see them, they will probably give you a really decent reading where you are kind of blown away by how psychic they are. And then they will tell you it's going to be some variation of. There is a curse on you, or there is a curse on your family, and I can remove the curse for you. And this is why, whatever the bad thing is in your life, this is why that bad thing is happening, right? Because if I'm psychic, I can know what's bothering you. And I can dig into that and I can say, look, this is why this is happening. you pay me this amount of money and I can fix it for you. Now, is magic real? I believe it is. Are there real practices of magic for hire that are fair and make sense? Yes. There are root workers. There are conjure workers. Absolutely. But when it's done in this context, when it's done out of fear, it's a scam.
Yeah.
And man, you know, I've spent most of my career cleaning up the messes that these people make. Mm-hmm. And it's otherwise intelligent people who fall for it.
Yeah.
In fact, in South Florida, within the past like 15 years or so, there was a huge bust in Fort Lauderdale.
Yes.
The Evans family. You remember this story,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
And like these, they had Bentleys. I promise you, I don't drive a Bentley. Right. Excuse me, it's making me cough just to think about it. So
no, that's funny.
Beware of these people. Right. If a person scares you in a reading to get more money, walk away. Okay. Now the second group of readers. Taking a drink because just talking about these people
gets you worked up. It does. Yeah.
The second group of readers, these are well-intentioned people who don't have enough knowledge, enough skill, enough time under their belt before they went pro, and they're just not very good.
Gotcha. Okay.
They're probably not going to do real harm, but out of the reading just feeling like, well, I don't know who that person was talking about, but it wasn't me.
Right. Yeah.
And I think a lot of this happens because people nowadays, because tarot is so popular these days, which is great, but it causes people to go pro too quickly. Right. Like I studied for 8 years before I went pro. And I think a lot of people, they take their first class, they get their first deck, and they are blown away. The first time they do a reading, they're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. They do another reading. It's so amazing. They're like, okay, I can go pro right now. And no, you can't. And no, you shouldn't. So that's another group of readers. How do you recognize them? It's hard. It's hard to know.
Right.
If you didn't get a good reading, don't refer it to your friends.
That's a good rule of thumb.
Right. Yeah. And then there are people like me who really, you know, and I've been full time in this for 30 years. So I don't think it's a stretch for me to say I have talent here. Right.
You wouldn't be doing it for this long, obviously. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And in fact, I noticed when you introduced me, you read the introduction off my website, which yes, now I recognize as dated because it does not mention that in the past few years I have been awarded World's Best Tarot Reader and World's Best Divination Teacher by the World Divination Association. Now, does that mean I think I am actually the best tarot reader or teacher in the world? Of course not. But my peers voted on people and I was nominated and voted for and won. So, you know, it means something, right?
No, the experience alone itself, it speaks for itself. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
So, but it's not just me. There are many great readers out there. Oh my goodness, so many. How do you know you got a good one? Oh, you'll know.
Right.
You'll know. Yeah.
That's true.
Right? They may not.
I've had bad ones. I've been a sucker for that thing you talked about at the beginning about. I've been a sucker for it. I absolutely have.
Oh, I'm 100%. So sorry. Oh my God.
It's okay. I learned my lesson though. I learned from that experience. And I learned what the difference is between a good and a bad one, just like how you explained it there. All those things that you said were 100% correct, because the people that I've known that have been able to read you, as they say, never asked for any kind of money. They said, if you want to leave something, you can leave something. We don't care. But we're not asking you for anything. But the ones that ask me for something, those are the ones that usually, like you said, they use fear. They use, you know, maybe past trauma that you've had that they picked up, you know, and then they use that against you. So, you know, I 100% agree what you're saying. And, you know, I consider myself a decently intelligent person. You know, I'm not saying I'm a genius by any means or stretch of the imagination, but I'm not dumb either. But I fell for it. And you know what I mean? Even somebody like myself could fall for something like that.
Well, you know, the people in Fort Lauderdale that we were talking about, the author Jude Devereaux, a very well-known American author, she spent tens of thousands of dollars to remove curses, you know, and she's obviously an intelligent person. And but you know, when you say that, I mean, obviously, I am a professional reader. I am going to ask you for money. But my rates are very clear. You know, I will tell you what you're going to pay, and I'm not going to ask you for any more than that. You know, and there it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes 100% sense. So let's get into the readings and the whole, the practice itself. So how do you interpret the cards and the meanings? Now, this is a whole other thing that I remember overhearing in that same conversation with the tarot card reader, and she was kind of like explaining that it's kind of like your own interpretation. Is that correct? Or please explain to me.
Well, okay. What I'm going to speak about is what I think is an ideal situation. Now, I know some readers who are professional readers who are really good, who use tarot, who cannot tell you the classic interpretation or the classic associations of any of the cards, but they're still good readers. That's because they're psychic and they've found their own way to work with the cards, and that's well and good. It bothers me when they call themselves tarot readers. I believe a tarot reader should have some basic understanding of the structure of the deck and of the classic interpretations. Now, I don't think any one of us knows it all because there is so much to know. And so I can tell you, like, I can talk tarot numerology and the four elements all day long. I can talk about the differences between Waite and Crowley all day long. But when you bring in Kabbalah and you bring in astrology, I'm limited. And that has not limited my career at all, but it limits me as a teacher. Because if you want to learn those things, I can't really teach you. So that's just the way that is. So how does it work? I believe that a good reader will have an understand. First of all, they will have chosen a tradition. They're a Waite reader, they're a Crowley reader, they're a Marseille reader. They might be bilingual or trilingual in this way, they might be, but that makes them a pretty special reader if they are. They will have their favorite decks that they like to work with, you know, and I think most of us own upwards of 150, 200 decks. I think a lot of us do.
Really?
Oh,
Wow.
sure. Because it's fun to collect, and why wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, why not?
But most of us will have just a couple of decks that are the workhorse decks that we will use in our readings. And we will have, like, okay, as an example, I've got my deck here. I'm going to pick one card at random. Okay, I've got the Two of Cups right here. Now, I could talk for at least 5 minutes about all the things this card could possibly mean. It is the card of perfect love and perfect partnership. It is also the card of healing through love. It is a card of any kind of partnership. It talks about how we connect with each other in loving ways, not just necessarily romantically, but in any kind of partnership or any kind of connection. And it talks about the choices we make having to do with love and friendship and the people that we engage with. So there's a lot there. And so it's all about context. That's the thing. You know, can any card mean anything? I don't want to say that, you know, but in context. And what provides context? The question that you're answering, the other cards that come up, and yes, your intuition. If I'm giving you a one card reading and there's no question, I have no context, it's going to be my intuition that tells me whether we want to talk about a business situation you've got going on, a romantic situation you've got going on, or a self-esteem situation you've got going on. It could be that too. So intuition will guide me in that direction. Now, when I do a reading for someone, like if I'm sitting there at that table, you're in my office for at least 15 minutes, maybe an hour, maybe a half hour, whatever you choose. And I'm going to look at 11 cards when I first start out in a spread. I use a a non-traditional Celtic cross. The Celtic cross is traditional. I use an 11-card spread. Most people use a 10-card spread. It's just a thing.
This is your style.
There it is. And so I am looking at that whole spread of cards. I'm looking at what I feel when I look at those cards. I'm looking at the colors, the numbers, the trends. I mentioned the four elements earlier. The four elements are key in astrology and tarot. The four elements, of course, have physical properties. They also have metaphysical properties. So I'm going to look at what's the elemental distribution here? What are we seeing? And that's going to tell me a lot, right? I will interpret the cards within the positions that they fall into, but I'm also going to interpret how they work with each other. So it's multi-layered. And from there, I'm going to figure out, like, what are the questions? You know, because a person may come to me because they think they have one question. No one has two
It's
questions.
usually a lot more than
There are so
that,
many questions. You got questions you didn't even know you had. And it's my job to figure out what those questions are. So in those 11 cards, I'm going to have my curiosities. You know, I'm interested in this part of your life, this part of your life, this part of your life. How does that match your questions? From there, I'm going to pick up all the cards and I'm going to read on each one of those questions and anything else that comes up. So for me, a reading is not just one spread, it's many different techniques and many, many questions.
Let me ask you this. Has there ever been a reading that you've had with somebody that not only did it impact them, but it also impacted you as well?
Do you know this story? Did you get fed this? I didn't feed you anything
You
beforehand.
fed me absolutely nothing.
Did you
No.
research this? Because there's a good story here.
I have looked at your website and I
You probably
looked it
don't know this
over.
story.
I looked
Okay.
over a couple of your YouTube videos and no. So I don't know
Okay, there's a
much.
story. Okay.
Okay.
And honestly, every reading impacts me, right? Every reading. But one reading impacted me more than any other, and it was not a professional reading. Okay, the truth is, you know, you're going to be a tarot hobbyist before you are a tarot professional. And not every hobbyist will be professional. And some of the hobbyists are as good readers, like good enough to be professional, right? And once we become professional, we never stop being hobbyists. You know, you still like, you don't, you never hate your job as a tarot reader, right? Right? You know, it's just such a gift. So we're going back to my very early days. I was a tarot reader, but I also had another part-time job. And at this part-time job, I worked in the office at a like a summer resort kind of a place. And I was working there on a Sunday afternoon. It was raining, and the person who was working with me was a young person, like just getting ready to graduate high school or no, maybe she was in college. Maybe she was in college. Yeah. And it's raining at a camp office. There's nothing to do all afternoon, and we can't leave. And she's like, "Do you have your cards?" Of course, I did.
Course.
And so we're just sitting here getting paid, right, to be there. But I'm reading for her, and she asks a question about her brother's health. And this is how I know she's the older of the two. She was in college because her brother was in high school at this point. And I knew he had some health issues. I knew him. I didn't really know the story. She asked about her brother's health. He had a kidney issue. And the cards were very clear that he did not have a good prognosis. I did not want to tell her that. And so I asked for another option. And what came up in the cards was that I should be the kidney donor, which I became.
That is amazing. That takes it to another level right there, right? I
It can
mean,
only happen once for one
right,
person.
obviously. You only got two kidneys, right? So yeah, you can only you only got one to give. I get it. So yeah, that's amazing. Do you still keep in contact with her to this day, or?
With the person I donated to, which is the brother, yes, especially on our anniversary, our kidneyversary.
Kidneyversary. Oh, I love it.
Right. He turned 20. No, excuse me, he turned 18 when we were in the hospital. So, like, he got a kidney for his 18th birthday. And this was many years ago. He kept that kidney for a good 20 years, which is about as long as you can keep a kidney. And he's now on a second kidney that a friend donated to him.
Wow.
So,
Okay.
you know, he's doing well.
Oh, that's such an amazing story. I had no idea. That was just a question that I had personally already written up. So maybe it was just perfect thing happening in the
Yeah,
universe right there
there it
happening there.
is.
So that's
There it is.
exactly right. Wow.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the misconceptions of tarot. So let me give you an example. I grew up in a very religious household. I was always told as a young child that Ouija boards and tarot cards are things of the devil and stay away and don't ever touch them and your best to avoid them. So what do you say to those types of people that are out there? What's the misconceptions? Why did it get such a negative maybe a paint of color, as they say?
Sure. Well, and what's very interesting is tarot itself came out of Catholicism because if you think about Italy in that time, it was all Catholic.
Right.
And you think about the tarot cards, they have a lot of Catholic imagery. For instance, the Hierophant, Major Arcana 5, was originally called the Pope, for
Oh,
example.
okay. Gotcha.
So Christianity is baked into tarot. Major Arcana 20, judgment is literally the rapture. It is the Christian rapture, is the imagery. So it's very interesting that there are kinds of Christians that find tarot very uncomfortable for them when in fact its origins are, you know, very Catholic, or at least, you know, very, very Catholic. So
Right. Yeah.
there's
Yeah.
that.
Wow.
So, you know, it's hard for me because, like, the brand of Christianity I was raised with does not even deal with the devil. You know, they're like, Satan is a concept, not a reality, right?
Right.
Hell is a
Right.
concept, not a reality. So, although I did dabble in evangelical Christianity as part of my teenage rebellion,
I love
right?
it. Yeah.
I've decided that fundamentalism of all kinds is, that is the evil, you know? When a fundamentalist is asking me about tarot being evil, what I'm going to say is there is evil in the room and it's not me.
Right.
Because, and I don't care if it's Christian fundamentalism, if it's Islamic fundamentalism, if it's tarot fundamentalism, fundamentalism of is always going to be evil. You know, if you trust something written in black and white with no nuanced thinking more than you trust what's going on in your life right now, you've got a problem.
Yeah, I agree. I
Now,
agree.
am I going to say that to the person who says, oh, I think the cards are evil? No. I say to them is don't have a reading.
Right.
If you
Yeah.
don't like the cards, don't come talk to me about it. Just don't have a reading. Now, the whole process of divination, fortune telling, you know, the idea of predicting the future, that's a dicey thing.
Yes.
Does anyone fully know the future? And I think this is where even very thoughtful Christians might have an idea with divination because, come on, only God knows the future. I'll be the first one to tell you that. Because, okay, do I predict the future? Oh, all the time. So do meteorologists. So
Right.
do financial forecasters. So do
Yes.
trend forecasters. A
Yes.
lot of us are out here predicting the future. And what do we know? We know that, you know, some things are predictable, some things aren't. And a good reader will tell you know, let's not make this reading all about predictions. Let's make it be about what you need to know to create your best outcome,
There you go.
right?
There you go.
Create the future you want. We have free will. And, you know, we can't create everything, we can't control everything. But just like tarot reading is going to be a combination of intuition and interpretation, I think when we use divination in our lives, it needs to be a combination of what are we predicting? What is the set of circumstances that we cannot change? And then within that, what can we do to make the most of that?
There we go. That's a see. That's a different way of thinking about it because every, when I say every, I you know, the people that I've met throughout my life, I maybe you've heard that once, and it's usually just about, oh, answering your questions, and that's just about it. You know what I mean? And so it's a very, I love that take because it's so true. It's because it's what you really want to get out of this. It's not just about the yes or no questions. So that's a very, very interesting way of thinking about it. Now, speaking of that, the whole practice of tarot card reading now, it's had its time, but it's also evolving too, right? It's particularly now in the digital age, how do you see this evolving now?
There's a lot there. There's a lot. I will tell you, a few years ago, like going back to like 2014, 2015, somewhere there maybe, a friend of mine and I gathered some people together at a tarot conference to do tarot magic to increase the accessibility and acceptability of tarot in the world. And that has happened. Now, I'm not saying it's because Jenna and I got together and did. I'm not saying that. But come on, I mean, it has happened.
It has happened.
So, to the good, more acceptable, more accessible. Of course, I'm loving that. There are many, many more decks being created now. There are many more publishers getting into it and indie publishers. Like, okay, digital age, indie publication is a thing. I'm indie published as an author now, which is a really, I mean, it's so good. So we proliferate without the gatekeeping of those traditional publishers. Although the traditional publishers are great and they're on board too. So we've got proliferation of ideas and images, which is great. The concern, there's a couple of concerns amongst the artists, the authors, the readers, that what tarot is gets lost, that it like there's it's entropy and it gets lost. So that's a concern. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's a concern. Now, for authors and artists, the digital age brings us piracy, which is a real concern. Do not buy your tarot decks from Temu, right? They are pirated. And so, like, if you're looking at a tarot deck and it looks like it caught the price is too good to be true, it is. It's a pirated deck. Do not buy it. Okay. So that's another thing. And then there's AI.
Yeah, that's the
AI
tricky one.
created tarot decks, AI created tarot books, AI tarot readings. And that's a thing. And,
Didn't even
I'm
know
going to tell you. The very
that.
first tarot conference I ever went to, someone who is a leader in the community and at that time was very more well known than me, than I am, said, "How does it feel that within 10 years your job will be taken over by computers?" And I was like, "Will not happen." Now, that was said to me in like 1998, so obviously did not happen. But AI can talk about tarot really well right now, and it's only going to get better. And like we're all over here kind of cringing about it because why does AI talk about tarot well? Because it's read all our blog posts and it's read all our books.
That's right. Yeah, it's learned.
So I don't know how I feel about any of this, and it's a
Right.
big argument in our community right now. I run a tarot conference, StarCon. And I was approached at this last conference in January by an artist who said, "So, what are your conference policies going to be on AI?" And I was like, "Conference policies on
On AI.
AI? I have to have those." So I'm thinking about that now, and I don't know what to say about it.
It's just something that I thought about too. And I was like, I wonder how this is going to affect, different things like tarot and things like that. So I figured I'd ask you. And it's scary kind of think about how technology has advanced so much. Do you think there's ever going to be like a cross between the, there's a talk about transhumanism, where the human body and mind are basically fused with technology. Do you think that's it's a slippery slope?
It already has happened. It is happening. It will happen too. I think it's a slippery slope. Slippery slope to what exactly?
That's the question, right?
You know, I'm worried, like, when it comes to AI right now, I'm worried about intellectual property.
Yeah,
You know,
that's number one.
that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
When we talk about, you know, tech, when we talk about biohacking and, you know, all of that, honestly, I'm all for it. If you can, I'm old now. If you can make me live for another 50 years, have it.
Let's do it, right?
Don't believe in the afterlife. I spend all day talking to dead people. But if I can have more time exploring this planet, I am down.
There you go. There you go. That's a refreshing outlook and take on that. So, a couple of the questions. What is the thing that you find most fulfilling and rewarding about giving readings?
Oh my gosh, every single thing. I've been doing this full time, day in, day out for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I am just as excited now as I have ever been.
Oh, that's
I
wonderful.
am a wildly curious person. Like if I didn't do this, I would probably be the worst gossip you would ever meet. Because I want to know. I want to know every single thing. I want to know what makes you tick. I am so curious about every single person.
Right.
So that a person will come and sit with me at my table, on Zoom, on the phone, at a party, whatever, and allow me to share with them some things that I see for them, that is just such a gift to me. And the fact that I get paid to do it is like even more. And what I love, I mean, it really is helping people. It is entertaining people, of course, but it is helping people.
Right.
And one of my favorite things to hear from a client at the table is, wow, I have never thought of that before. When I give a person something that they, a new way of looking at things, a new way of framing something, a new perspective, when I can give that to someone, that is so much healing happens with that. Like if we talk about our healing internally, our emotional healing, it's all about new perspective. And if I can, using the cards, provide a new perspective for someone that allows them to tell the story of their life in a way that he is healing for them, oh my gosh, what a blessing is that for everybody.
I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. I mean, I could understand. It's amazing, amazing what you do, and I applaud you for doing what you do. And you know, a lot of people are not as selfless like that. You know what I mean? It's just there's just a lot of selfish people in the world, unfortunately. You know.
I mean, yes, I love helping, but here's the selfish part. This is my office. You're looking at my office. What do you see? And you're seeing my turntable, my guitar, my drums,
Yep.
my reading table, all my tarot decks. But I work for myself.
That's right.
I get to do what I want to do in my space 24/7.
What a blessing.
Yeah.
What a blessing. Yeah.
So, in a way, it is selfless, but in a way, it is really selfish. You know, because
Yeah.
I've gotten to live the life I want to live.
That's great. Let's talk about finally, Christiana, you know, for our listeners, some information about the services that you particularly provide. Let's talk about your website. Let's talk about that. Tell us first off the website and of course what you offer on that.
Certainly. Certainly. The website is simply first name, last name, me, right? So Christiana Gaudette, first name, last name .com. And on my website, you will see my blogs. And is anyone blogging anymore? We're podcasting on YouTube,
I
Rockfin.com. You'll read my years of blogs that are still there for sure.
Right,
And on
yeah.
my website, you can connect to me on social media. And you can book an appointment with me. Now, I see appointments in my office in Palm City. I also do parties. I'm happy to travel to you for a party. I will read for you anywhere in the world on Zoom. We can do FaceTime, we can do phone, whatever you like. I also do mentorship. We can work together. I can teach you tarot. I can help you build your tarot business. I will also do personal growth mentorship with you if
Wow.
that's where you're at and what you need.
Right.
Now, I also run StarCon, StaarCon.com. We are the world's first and only international multi-track hybrid tarot and divination conference. We
Wow.
meet once a year in West Palm Beach, Florida, in January, and also online on the Excellivance platform. And so you can find out more about that at starcon.com, which is starcon.com.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm going to have to make it next year. I missed it this year, so
Yeah, well,
next
you
year
know,
it's.
I'm wondering if we can do a thing, you
Yeah, we
know?
can do something
We
together.
should do
Yes,
a thing,
absolutely. Yes,
right?
absolutely. Yeah, we're neighbors. I mean, it doesn't
Yeah.
make any. Yeah, it makes perfect sense to do something
Right.
like that. So I definitely have to go ahead and get out there. ChristianaGodDead.com. Please, guys, go out there and check her out. Check out all of her stuff. Christiana, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really, really do appreciate it.
Oh my
Thank you
gosh.
for giving me and us such a great, vast knowledge and historical Ontario, and giving us a different way of looking at this, and not, taking away those misconceptions and things of that nature. So, really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you.
Perfect, perfect. All right, Christiana, listen, we're going to be promoting all your stuff on our website, and of course, check her out, ChristianaGodet.com. And thank you for coming on Dark Fringe Radio.
Thank you so much.
Dark Fringe Radio, your premier source for the paranormal, conspiracy theory, and true crime.